I'm Teresa Mitchell, and this is Press Watch with the sobriquet, the news you're not supposed to know. It's a left opinion program, and I'm a leftist. Hello. You don't hear people say that very much. I hear people say that they're a progressive, you know. But anarcho-socialist? No, I don't hear that very much, so stay tuned for something a little different. Unless you've heard me before over the better part of the last two decades, and then it'll be more of the same, I guarantee you. Well, first I want to start off with what you're supposed to be afraid of today. And I think I have the latest. Here we are from the Associated Press. The White House says North Korea's preparations for long-range missile launch are very far along. National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley says Washington's watching very carefully, though the North's true intentions are anyone's guess. Hadley's traveling with President Bush in Hungary and was responding to South Korea's defense minister, who told lawmakers a launch is not imminent. The president has urged Pyongyang not to test the new missile, which reportedly has a range that includes the western United States. Heck, that says here in Oregon. Oh, back to the text. China today said it's, quote, very concerned, end quote. Hadley was asked if the U.S. missile defense system that's now being developed would be used to shoot the North Korean missile down. He declined to say, noting only that the system is designed to defend America against attack, but it's currently in the R&D phase. Yeah, that's what he said. Pretty careful covering on his part, I think. Sort of a dodgy way of saying it doesn't work. But there's, of course, that's in the context of demonizing North Korea by pretending that they are a threat. This is sort of like when you go out into the streets foolishly thinking that the Constitution actually matters and that you are allowed to peaceably assemble to redress the government or petition their government for redress of grievances, as the First Amendment says. And you're suddenly met with a terrific group of angry and armed and armored riot cops. What's the reason? Are you really such a danger? No. You could be criminalized by pretending that you're a danger. And, of course, this is what's happening to North Korea. We're pretending that their poor little missile, which is probably put together with melted down pistols from the Stasi and duct tape and cardboard, is actually a threat to the western United States, even though there's absolutely no reason to think so. But let's continue with some of the news. Now, to get a slightly different angle on it, I turn to the Jerusalem Post. North Korea has issued repeated complaints in recent weeks about alleged American spy flights, including in skies off the coast where a missile test facility is located. On Thursday, the North admonished Washington again. Military provocations by the U.S. against North Korea are reaching their extreme, the North Korean Central News Agency said in a report. This series of illegal infiltrations and spying by U.S. reconnaissance planes is creating a danger of a military clash in the skies over the area, they said. The U.S. has sent ships off the Korean coast that would be capable of detecting and tracking a missile launch, a Pentagon official said Wednesday. That's from the Jerusalem Post. Now, this from the Russian press, rain.ru. A Russian presidential aide said Tuesday, the imminent launch of a North Korean ballistic missile was largely a matter of psychology. They put the word imminent in quotation marks. It is widely believed, they write, that Pyongyang is stepping up preparations to fire the Taepodong-2, a two-stage ballistic missile with a range of up to 6,000 kilometers, that's 3,700 miles, that could, in theory, deliver a warhead to Alaska. Let them launch it first, and then we will see whether it will fly, where it will fly, and whether it can reach its target in the first place, Igor Shuvalov said. Okay, it's probably Shuvalov, but I can't resist saying Shuvalov. That just really rolls off the tongue. Igor Shuvalov. Last month, a U.S. space satellite spotted a booster rocket and several fuel tanks on a launch pad on the coast of the communist country, which has claimed it already has a nuclear capability. According to regional media reports, the missile could be fired at any moment. Pyongyang last tested a long-range missile in 1998 when it fired the Taepodong-1 missile with a range of 1,240 miles over Japan. The missile landed in the Pacific Ocean, causing a shock in Tokyo. Okay, some information about this. At the risk of repeating myself, there was a somewhat covert blow-up between North Korea and the U.S. during the Clinton administration, and I remember talking about it here on KBOO because it almost became a big deal and it was forgotten. But I want to note that the idea that North Korea is a threat to the U.S. is purely fear-mongering fantasy. Pyongyang knows that any serious attack against the U.S. would likely be met with a nuclear response. They like survival as much as you and I do. And the Russian press is echoing the U.S. press when they point out that North Korea has a nuclear capability, but the Taepwangdong-1 couldn't have launched a nuke, and neither could this missile. The dreaded missile is a new version of the Taepwangdong, a pitiful excuse for an intercontinental ballistic missile. Here in the U.S., we have thousands of more capable rockets and miniaturized fission-fusion warheads on them. The last Taepwangdong attempted to launch a softball-sized satellite into orbit. The U.S. said the satellite failed, but maybe they were just being nasty. After all, or rather after the WMDs and the Al-Qaeda connection and mission accomplished and the stolen elections and all that, and after 9-1-1, the word of the Bush administration is something that I take about as seriously as a North Korean press release. As a resident of the West Coast, frankly, I have a lot more to fear from the insane Bush administration than I have to fear from the insane North Koreans. The idea that the North Koreans could do absolutely any wacky thing at any moment, often repeated by U.S. demagogues, is frankly a racist ploy. I mean, think about it. Are we to believe that there is such a thing as an inferior people? How's the song go? Until the philosophy that one race is superior and another is inferior is completely and totally eliminated. Isn't that a bit 20th century? But the beat goes on. Check out this report from Chicago Sun-Times. And listen for the bias. It'll hit you. This is from Dateline Agatna, Guam. per my request, Ani just brought in a satellite photo with far greater resolution of Kebu, which you can get from Google Maps. And the reason I asked her to look into this is that satellite photos are being shown of the launch site. If you get a newspaper or pull up the news, and they're far less detailed and far more distant and far less focused than you can actually get on Google Maps of any location. This is the 21st century. And the U.S. propaganda ministries are counting on, and by that I mean the corporate news as well, are counting on the fact that a lot of people aren't aware of just how advanced technology has become, and they want to scare you with this North Korean missile, and they show it from a great distance. But I can see cars in the intersection, and I can see the color of the cars in the intersection on the Google, photo of Kebu headquarters, which is a massive skyscraper, by the way, and the green glass up here in the tower top is casting its glow over the whole. No, actually, it's just a little concrete building. So the idea is that you'll be afraid and you'll think that there aren't details and that the U.S. military just doesn't know and anything could happen. And those crazy North Koreans, and it's all crap. It's all war-mongering crap, frankly. And I want to... You know, if I could, I would go out over national media and I would say that it's crap, and here's why. But have to accept the fact that Kebu will be shouted down, and I have to hope that pointing out the truth will have sort of a catalyzing effect, and that the truth will seep around as it sometimes does on the internet. Getting back to the Chicago Sun-Times. As tensions with North Korea rise, three U.S. aircraft carriers filled the skies with fighters Tuesday for one of the largest U.S. military exercises in decades on this small Pacific island. Okay, breaking away from that text. Did you know that? We're talking about North Korea being a threat with their pitiful missile, and we've got three U.S. aircraft carriers. First time ever a Chinese delegation was invited to observe. That was the focus of the article, actually. But it says, as the show of American military power began, North Korea, one of the region's most unpredictable countries, you know, racistly inferior is what they're saying, racially inferior, was rattling swords of its own. The maneuvers, dubbed Valiant Shield, bring three carriers together in the Pacific for the first time since the Vietnam War. 30 ships, 280 aircraft, and 22,000 troops will be participating in the five-day war games. Now, that means, like, this is going on right now. This is huge. We are threatening the hell out of North Korea right now. 9:11 and 46 seconds, you're listening to KBOO Portland. The exercises are intended to boost the ability of the Navy, Air Force, and Marines to work together and respond quickly. In this part of the world, U.S. military officials said even U.S. Coast Guard vessels were participating. This article from the, is this an AP article? I think so. The maneuvers mark the first major operation in this remote U.S. territory about halfway between Hawaii and Japan since the announcement last month that 8,000 Marines would be moved here from Okinawa as part of the biggest realignment of U.S. forces in Asia in decades. Big things happening. Military officials emphasized that the exercises have been open to outside observation and are not intended to provoke North Korea. Hey, who asked about North Korea? This from the Navy Times aboard the USS Ronald Reagan. That's the dateline. Not making this up. The massive Valiant Shield military exercise off the waters of Guam sends several messages, one of which is peace through strength, said the admiral of one of three characters in the exercise. That message is displayed through the Navy's invitation of China to view the war games, an attempt to make the sleeping military giant a friend rather than a potential foe. I'm not making this up. They write this stuff. But anyway, the exercise, the largest gathering of aircraft carriers in the Pacific since the Vietnam War, also comes at a time when North Korea has given strong indications it will test fire a missile powerful enough to reach the United States. You hear this. You can even hear that sort of crap on Air America News. You know, it's like, without context, the idea that, you know, the missile is threatening us. Oh, no, the West Coast. I'm on the West Coast. What can you put in that payload and it's the size of your fist? Come on. It's ridiculous. So what's really going on is there is massive, massive military firepower being brought to bear against North Korea right now. And what will that lead to? Are they once again trying to stress North Korea into a collapse? That is an ongoing strategy of the United States. It is believed it worked against the former USSR. I'm not remembering specific incidents right now, but it was probably brought to bear against East Germany. It's constantly being brought to bear and failing against Cuba. So maybe that's what's up. Or on the other hand, maybe there's a war imminent. Certainly we have the war propaganda, the missile, which might strike at any moment. What a load. What a payload. And so I just want to drive that as much as I can. excuse me. That this threat from North Korea is bogus. There's no threat from North Korea, people. It's bogus. It's made up. Now to change topics, by the way, if you have comments, the number to call 503-231-8187 from truthout.org, talking about the indictment of Karl Rove. They write, for the record, we did reach Kimberly Nerheim, a spokesperson for Patrick Fitzgerald, and asked her these questions. Did a grand jury return an indictment of Karl Rove? Did Patrick Fitzgerald send a fax to Robert Luskin similar to that described in recent press reports? Is Patrick Fitzgerald's probe of the plane matter still ongoing? Her response to each question was identical. I have no comment. They also write, Truth Out writes, our sources continue to maintain that a grand jury has in fact returned an indictment. Our sources say that parts of the indictment were read to Karl Rove and his attorney on Friday, May 12th, 2006. And so there's been no public statement from Fitzgerald. And if you look at the source for the news about no indictment, it's purely coming out of the Rove camp. There's also the issue of a criminal indictment, 06-CR-128, which is sealed. And what have we got left but speculation and obvious Rovian cloud building here? More information on that from the Libby Defense Fund, defending the world from Scooter Libby. Hot on the heels of our Libby Defense Fund email, they write, discussing the speculative theory that Rove may have been let off the hook by orders of higher-ups in the Justice Department, most likely Alberto Bush Consigliere Gonzalez. Newsday reports speculation that Libby will be pardoned by Bush. I think ultimately, of course, there are going to be pardons, said Joseph DeGeneva, a former prosecutor and an old Washington hand who shares that view with many pundits. If there were ever an insider to know of such plans, DeGeneva, part of a husband and wife team who do legal sound bites for the Republicans, would know. The most likely timing for a Libby pardon would be after midterms, but before Libby's trial were to begin. This would follow a pattern that old man Bush set when he pardoned Caspar Weinberger before his trial even began, along with other Iran-Contra participants, remember that, who were given a get-out-of-jail-free card by Poppy Bush. The only certainty in this theory is that Libby won't be pardoned before the midterms. Rove knows that this would cause intense political damage that could tip either body of Congress into Democratic hands. But once the election's over, what does Bush have to lose? Interesting speculation, don't you think? Number to call, 503-231-8187. Continuing, Cheney was clearly part of the effort to besmirch Joe Wilson, and likely gave the green light to out Valerie Plame. It's more than possible that Bush knew all about the effort, certainly after he was questioned about the outing and promised to find the leaker. So Bush, like his dad, doesn't want the Libby case to come to trial. With Rove not being indicted for whatever behind-the-scenes theory you choose and Libby being pardoned, Bush and Cheney can sail freely through the choppy waters of their last 2 years in office without fear of being in legal jeopardy for their roles in Plamegate. As usual, we caution that this is only another speculative prediction, but the Bush clan and Karl Rove don't stray much from their previous playbooks, and Poppy Bush left independent counsel Lawrence Walsh, with nothing but years of useless evidence when the senior Bush pardoned the Iran-Contra crew. No doubt the trial of Caspar Weinberger would have exposed Bush family culpability. It's the same threat posed by a trial of Scooter Libby. Scooter Libby. You know, my mouth just wants to make extra syllables today. Take it as flavor. Yeah, that's what it is. It's flavor. And changing topics again, if you have comments, 503-231-8187. Oh, I'm skipping somebody who wants to comment. A couple of somebodies. Okay, hi, you're on the air. Got to listen to the phone, not to the radio.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, you're on. What's up?
Teresa, hi. I'm sorry, didn't recognize your voice there. You know, you're very smart on so many things and usually finish my sentences before I even get very far a few times I get to call your show.
But...
And I agree with you on this entire military-industrial complex, this compartmentalized government that's creating its own threats and its own enemies around the world. I mean, you read the PNAC documents. I mean, that's a given. We know that.
PNAC, Project for a New American Century.
Correct, especially Rebuilding America's Defenses, which lays out Dick Cheney's blueprint from the 90s.
A new Pearl Harbor is needed, they said.
Right. Yes, that's right. Now, I agree with you. I believe Korea is a manufactured threat as well, but Iran right now, of course, you know, is the globalist big plan to get us into the Middle East and conquer more sovereign nations and destroy their governments. One thing you may not know, however, on Korea, this is why it's so fake, is that back in 2002, I think it was 2003, the Korean Times reported using a government document that North Korea had fired a missile and fragments of it were found in Alaska. So why are they covering that up? Well, I think it's obvious. The PNAC plans right now state their first priority is the Middle East. So I agree with you on North Korea not being a threat. You know, it's a manufactured project of this military-industrial complex, but I didn't know if you were aware of that or not.
No, I've never heard that. That's interesting. Very interesting.
You might want to check that out.
Do you have some keywords to punch into search engines?
North Korean missile found in Alaska.
Yeah, okay.
Korean and Korean Times. That's where it was reported. You might be able to find that. Check it out.
That's wild.
Other than that, I'm enjoying your show. Have a nice day.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Number to call for comments, 503-231-8187, 231-8187 in the 503 area code. And I think I have another call. Okay, this person could not wait. Well, I want to change topics now, talking about losing the war in Iraq. And what can give a better picture than the famous Baghdad cable? The Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad cable to Condoleezza Rice. And I think I just want to present some of this over the air for your consideration. Subject, snapshots from the office, sensitive. Number one, Iraqi staff in the public affairs sector have complained that Islamist and militia groups have been negatively affecting daily routine. Harassment over proper dress and habits is increasingly persuasive. They also report power cuts and fuel prices have diminished their quality of life. Women's rights. Number two of our three female employees report stepped up harassment beginning in mid-May. One, a Shia who favors Western clothing, was advised by an unknown woman in her Baghdad neighborhood to wear a veil and not to drive her own car. She said some groups are pushing women to cover even their face, a step not taken in Iran, even at its most conservative. Third, another, a Sunni, said people in her neighborhood are harassing women and telling them to cover up and stop using cell phones. She said the taxi driver who brings her every day to the green zone has told her he cannot let her ride unless she wears a head cover. A female in the PAS cultural section is now wearing a full abaya after receiving direct threats. Fourth, the women say they cannot identify the groups pressuring them. The cautions come from other women, sometimes from men who could be Sunni or Shia, but appear conservative. Some ministries, notably the Sadrist-controlled Ministry of Transportation, have been forcing females to wear the hijab at work. Fifth, staff members have reported it is now dangerous for men to wear shorts in public. They no longer allow their children to play outside in shorts. People who wear jeans in public have come under attack. Evictions. One colleague beseeched us to help a neighbor who was uprooted in May from her home of 30 years on the pretense of application of some long disused law. The woman, who is a Faley Kurd, says she has nowhere to go, but the courts give them no recourse to this new assertion of power. Such uprootings may be a response by the new Shia government authorities to similar actions against Arabs by Kurds in other parts of Iraq. Note, an Arab newspaper editor told us he is preparing an extensive survey of ethnic cleansing, which he says is taking place in almost every Iraqi province, as political parties and their militias are seemingly engaged in tit-for-tat reprisals all over Iraq. Power cuts and fuel shortages, a drain on society, topic 7. Temperatures in Baghdad have already reached 115 degrees. I'm going to stop there. When the temperature is 104 degrees, I have severe health problems. I'll bet a lot of you do. There's much more to this cable, but I have someone calling in, so I'll extend the airwaves. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Teresa. Another great show, as always.
Thank you.
No, when you're researching that Korean warhead found in Alaska, which was in 2003, I should note it was right around the time that we were initially assaulting Iraq, and it would have appeared bad to be attacking the wrong country, so the entire news of the warhead was buried, in fact, and completely missing from U.S. media.
That's fascinating. The first thing I thought of was how quickly the news of the Iraqi, I don't know what to call it, rocketry ministry's satellite was banished from the news. And that was back in 89 or 90. It was just before the first U.S. War efforts. And they actually did manage to put a satellite in orbit with a 2- or 3-stage missile, an impressive accomplishment, and they were very proud of it. And it was just gone.
Well, speaking of satellites, you know, if you do a little research into this current mania involving this this test from North Korea, you'll discover that South Korean ministry officials believe that it's actually a satellite test, not a missile test per
se. That's what's being said in South Korean newspapers.
Yeah. So in fact, wow! Surprise, surprise! Once again, big war being built up, and we're the only ones who hear about it.
I get used to the power paradigm, and so I sometimes don't mention it, but I think I probably should say that if you look at South Korean media in English, you'll find some newspapers collaborating with U.S. intentions and others speaking frankly. And it just takes a little practice to learn who does what. But it's worth looking at. There's a lot of English South Korean newspapers on the web, and I would just encourage people to check that out.
Hey, Teresa, do you have a blog?
I do. and I haven't mentioned it for so long.
Well, come on.
And I haven't posted for a few weeks, but I did post a couple of weeks ago, and it's presswatch.blogspot.com.
Right on. Okay. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for calling in, and hi, we'll go to the next caller. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Hello.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
It's me, Lisa Loving, calling again.
Hi,
Lisa.
I just
move into the air room. But you were mentioning the Truth Out story on the Rove indictment.
Yeah.
Tonight on the KBOO Evening News, we interview Jason Leopold.
Wow.
He is the investigative reporter for Truth Out that broke that story. Teresa, he is in town tonight. He's speaking at 7:30 at Powell's on Burnside. And neither he nor the entire senior staff of Truth Out is backing down from that story at all. It's one of the most fascinating developments I've ever seen in government reporting.
Yeah, the way I view it, it's just, I can't believe the press falls for Rove's tricks every time. Why? When they hear something from Rove's office, why don't they say, okay, in what ways is this bogus? I mean, why do they believe anything he says?
It's pretty fascinating. I just have to say that. So we're going to interview him tonight on the 5 o'clock news on KBOO.
Awesome.
7:30 live at Powell's Books. His new book is called News Junkie, and it's real hard to put down.
Okay, so tune in at 5 p.m. for the ever more awesome KBOO News.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks much for that.
Bye.
Wow, cool. Hey, I did a cross promotion night that wasn't even trying. Okay, now talking about 115 degrees in Baghdad, employees from the cable that was leaked to the Washington Post, employees all confirmed that by the last week of May they were getting 1 hour of power for every 6 hours without. By early June, the situation had improved slightly, and Hal al-Shab, power has recently improved from 1 in 6 to 1 in 3 hours. Other staff report similar variances. Okay, we're talking about you get to turn on your air condition your air conditioner once every few hours, and it's 115 degrees. Oh, my God. Let me just check with the engineer. We got people waiting to talk about that right now. We do not. Okay. Central Baghdad neighborhood Bab al-Nutham has had no city power for over a month. Areas near hospitals, political party headquarters, and the Green Zone have the best supply. One staff member reported a friend lives in a building that houses the new minister. Within 24 hours of his appointment, her building had city power 24 hours a day. This is the cable that has been leaked from the ambassador, U.S. ambassador to Iraq, to Condoleezza Rice. It's been leaked to the Washington Post. Topic 8, all employees supplement city power with service contracted with neighborhood generator hookups that they pay for monthly. Number 9, fuel queues. One employee told us that he had spent 12 hours on his day off waiting to get gas. Topic 10, one employee informed us that his brother-in-law had been kidnapped. The man was eventually released, but this caused enormous emotional distress to his family. One employee, Sunny Kurd, received an indirect threat on her life in April. She took extended leave and by May relocated abroad with her family. Security forces mistrusted. Topic 11. In April, employees began reporting a change in the demeanor of guards at the Green Zone checkpoints. They seemed to be militia-like, in some cases seemingly taunting. One employee asked us to get her some press credentials because the guards held her embassy badge up and proclaimed loudly to passersby, "Embassy!" as she entered. Such information is a death sentence if heard by the wrong people. Now, departing from this text, this is describing an occupation that is failing. This is describing impending disaster, because we're talking to hear about the cream of the cream in Iraq, people who actually have jobs, people who have the protection of the U.S. military, people who have all the surveillance capabilities and firepower of that military, and they're terrified, and they're laying it out point by point. Point 12, employees all share a common tale of 9 employees in March. Only 4 had family members who knew they worked at the embassy. Iraqi colleagues who are called after hours often speak in Arabic as an indication they cannot speak openly in English. Topic 13, we cannot call employees on weekends or holidays without blowing their cover. A Sunni Arab female employee tells us family pressures and the inability to share details of her employment is very tough. She told her family she was in Jordan when we sent her training to the U.S. Mounting criticism of the U.S. at home among family members also makes her life difficult. She told us in mid-June that most of her family believes the U.S., which is widely perceived as fully controlling the country and tolerating the malaise, is punishing the population as Saddam did, but with Sunnis and very poor Shia now at the bottom of the list. Otherwise, she says, the allocation of power and security would not be so arbitrary. Oh, I've run out of time. Heck, I can't get to topics 14 through 20-something, 23. So you'll just have to look it up yourself. Washington Post, the cable from the ambassador. Stay tuned for more of the Incomparable Radio Zine here on KBOO.